We learn online that William Parsons, 3rd Earl of Ross, often known simply as Lord Ross, was a prominent Irish astronomer, engineer, and peer who famously built the world's largest telescope of the 19th century. Lord Ross is best known for constructing a massive 72-inch, that is a 6-foot, reflecting telescope in 1845. Colloquially known as the Leviathan of Parsonstown, it was the world's largest aperture telescope for over 70 years. He engineered the telescope himself, spending years mastering the metallurgical techniques required to cast and polish giant mirrors made of speculum metal. Lord Ross made historic contributions to deep sky observation. He was the first person to discover the spiral structure of cosmic objects, which were then called spiral nebulae. His most famous sketch was of M51, the Whirlpool Nebula. He also observed and famously named the Crab Nebula because his early drawings resembled the crustacean. By briefly looking back at the history of astronomical imaging, we can trace a more exact account of how technology has transformed what we see and how we represent the cosmos. We have a chance to spend time with Dr. Elizabeth Kessler of Stanford, and she contends that a quest for greater resolution in many ways defines the history of astronomical observing. The Hubble Space Telescope delivers precisely detailed images. A trio of images of the Whirlpool Galaxy spans more than 150 years of technological changes and demonstrates how much more astronomers can now observe than in Lord Ross's day. The most recent, the Hubble's digital image of the Whirlpool Galaxy, is perhaps familiar to us. The oldest is an engraving based on Lord Ross's drawings of the Whirlpool, dating from the mid-19th century, and published in J.P. Nichols' popular Architecture of the Heavens. The third image is a photograph that was taken in the mid-20th century through the 200-inch reflecting telescope at Palomar Observatory. All three images clearly depict the defining elements of that galaxy, its spiral shape, so clearly visible because of the galaxy's orientation in relation to Earth, and its smaller, less distinct companion galaxy. Looking closer reveals the ambiguity that remains in the older images. The lines in the 19th century engraving could correspond to either the dark regions or the bright, and the makeup of the object is unclear. The Palomar photograph gives more definition to the arms, but it is still difficult to determine whether arms and center are masses of stars or some other glowing material. In contrast, the Hubble's Whirlpool exhibits a remarkable degree of detail. Stars dot the arms, and one can trace a ridge of stars along the tops of the arms into the galaxy's center. Instead of a white amorphous shape, the galaxy's center reveals subtle patterns that echo those seen throughout the object. The increased precision derives in part from the locations of the different telescopes. Not only the cloudy nights, but the thick layers of atmosphere on clear nights obstructed starlight and prevented it from reaching Lord Ross's Leviathan's mirror. By building telescopes atop mountains like Mount Palomar, astronomers increased what they could see through their instruments. At an elevation of 5,500 feet above sea level, Palomar's telescopes take advantage of the thinner atmosphere at higher elevations to ensure improved observation. The Hubble Space Telescope launched into orbit with the aid of the space shuttle and teams of astronomers observes the universe free of any obscuring effects of the Earth's atmosphere. Thank you. Dr. Kessler turns to Don Ide, who is a philosopher of technology, who writes that new instrumentation gives us new perceptions. And she goes on to suggest that by looking closely at the Hubble images, examining the events that led to their production, unpacking the process used to craft them, and placing them within a larger visual history, it becomes possible to appreciate the multifaceted views of the universe they offer for scientists and the general public to consider. In the end, she says, the Hubble images propose that it's only in exploring those images that we can begin to know the most encompassing and interconnected of all forms, the cosmos. Remember Carl Sagan and his groundbreaking PBS series, Cosmos, A Personal Journey, that became the most watched public television series before the Civil War by Ken Burns? Sagan believed that looking at the universe was not just a scientific pursuit, but a profound perspective-shifting experience essential for human survival, and that the cosmos should not be left to experts. He wanted to democratize science so anyone could use critical thinking to understand fundamental aspects of the universe. And besides, we're about to learn that looking at the universe is very cool, and it's fun. The Everhart Museum in Scranton is giving us just this chance. The Hubble Space Telescope, New Views of the Universe, is a 2,200-square-foot exhibit that immerses us in the magnificence and mystery of Hubble's mission and introduces us to the James Webb Space Telescope. The exhibit features a scale model of the Hubble Space Telescope, as well as several satellite stations that offer visitors a hands-on experience with the same technology that allows Hubble to gaze at distant galaxies. These units also feature Hubble's contributions to the exploration of planets, stars, galaxies, and the universe. We will learn about Hubble's various instruments and the role that each one plays in providing exciting new images and discoveries. We also get a glimpse of the various hurdles Hubble faced in its career and discover the role that astronauts played in repairing and servicing the observatory. The exhibit showcases Hubble's iconic images and data of planets, galaxies, regions around black holes, and many other fascinating cosmic entities. You can experience the Hubble exhibition at the Everhart Museum at Naog Park in Scranton through October 18th. James Lansing, curator at the Everhart, stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about the exhibit and why it's a good fit for the Everhart.
It's art and natural history and science. So we have a lot of artifacts. We have a lot of Asian artifacts, Native American, which I was forced to take down because of the new federal laws. So each of these pieces have to be approved by the nation where they come from. And that's becoming a problem for all museums, especially like the Natural History Museum in New York. They had to close a whole wing and hire about 5 or 6 different people to track down. And so it's affected everybody. It's affected us.
The thing that we keep hearing echoing down from Scranton is you have to see these Hubble images. Tell us what is on exhibition and the source and how it is that you get in line, because it must be a hot ticket for museums to present.
For the Hubble telescope? I applied for it probably the first month I started in 23. I applied for it. I saw it online and I put us in the running, and they got back to me and said, if you have this much space, we'll let you have it, and you can have it in, well, opened in January. So it took that long, and we have it until October 18th, which is really nice. And we told them, if you have nowhere else to put it, we'll keep it for as long as you need to.
And it is multidimensional, literally, but in terms of the images, but it's not just images that were captured by the Hubble Space Telescope, but it is how the telescope functions, all kinds of facets of the whole program, right?
Yes, it is not just images. There's lots of interactive things for kids to investigate. You can investigate space, and we also have a section for the James Webb Telescope for the next progression of telescopes in space. And along with it, we have a Paul Richards exhibit from Dunmore, astronaut from Dunmore, So we have an exhibit of his items that we went down and collected from him. So it's a lot of different things in this exhibit, but it's been incredibly successful for the museum.
I can imagine that teachers would want to bring classes, and that's part of it.
Yes.
And just parents with young people or just grown-ups saying, ah.
There's a lot of grown-ups for sure. I mean, it's like me, someone who loves space, and they love the images, but they also love the interactive part to it, that there's at least 12 screens where they can learn all about the progression up to the Hubble and what's going to come next and what it's really investigating. And along with it, we also have a Turkish artist on one of the walls, a contemporary look at space. And what he does is when the images come from space, it's all pixelated. So he actually paints the pixels square by square. So you get a whole different view. And he heard about us and we found out about him and he shipped his stuff right to us. And he's a big artist in Turkey.
Do we start at one point and then go through the exhibition or can we wander?
Oh, you can wander. You can pick it up at any point. There's actually items that, while they relate to Hubble, they more relate to NASA and space. So as you said, you can pick it up anywhere you would like, including the James Webb section. You can pick that up whenever you would like.
What people will be curious about is, this is data, right? When it comes from Hubble,
yes,
it's data.
Yes.
So how does it become these amazing images that we're going to see in the museum?
Well, I think that's what this Turkish artist, Yagiz Azgin is his name, and he looks at those and they put them together once they come from space, and then they, some kind of computer programs, they put them all together.
And so the colors that we see, that's not what's coming in from the telescope to the ground control.
Well, I'm sure it's coming in some kind of data package. But what I've learned from this Turkish artist is, even though we see the pictures eventually, and as you've just touched on, the pigments and the colors are going to be completely different to a point. And one of the images that the Turkish artist has is of the pillars of creation. And so you look at that on the wall with just pixels, and then you look at the final product, and then it might already be gone because it's millions of miles away, light years anyway. So it might already be gone. So who knows what it even looks like now.
It is awe-inspiring, isn't it?
Yes. To me, it is. As someone that's always loved space. And I like to see that if the kids can all just go in and touch things and bring up all these images. And they're fascinated. And I think that's important that we put that message out to kids that space is important. That people think that they're wasting money on it. It's not a waste of money because technology comes from it and all kinds of things.
Were you little James out in the backyard with a telescope?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a Star Trek freak as a kid and I'm still a Star Trek freak. So yes, I was definitely that kind of kid.
Yeah. And I'm sure that you can go through every day and see something new.
I can, and I've been through it since January. And there's always new things, especially we have a deep space section of it. And you can just pick one little point in space and it brings up these pictures from light years away, millions of light years away, which is fascinating to me how far these things are away.
As you told us at the start, James, the Everhart Museum is an art, natural history, and science museum. And yet this is not just a science exhibition. There is a sense, isn't there, that these images, when we just look at them like the Turkish artist working with the pixels, in some way they are like art.
They're definitely art. Now, the composition, the colors, the perspective on these, they're definitely art. Even what he does with his pixels, if you look at them close and far, they start to make their own picture, yes.
What about the new exhibition of astrophotography?
Again, Sean Parker. He is from Tucson. And what's really funny is how things come full circle. When I was a student at the University of Arizona, I had heard of him. And friends of mine were friends of his. And he had just started. He was a young kid. But he would run these programs on top of a bar with a telescope and get people interested in space. And now he's become internationally known photographer. And we had his show open last week. And he came in from Tucson. And what's really funny is, I think he was more excited, even though this is his first museum show. I think he was more excited to see the office exhibit than he was about his own exhibit because he just loved the office. But no, he was really, really excited. And to go along with that, on Friday, the National Geographic on their homepage because there was going to be an eclipse happening, they happened to publish three of his photographs. And one of them is in our exhibit, and another one is going to be in the extended exhibit, which I'm extending next week to another room that's going to be empty. So it's really timely for us.
Is the space that you're using for this what you might be using for an art exhibit with paintings on the wall?
Yeah, the same kind of setup. It's right as you come in the museum, and his photographs are almost, they almost become 3D. He's so good at it. And I've had people mention that at the opening last week. They were like, this looks like 3D. I'm like, yeah, he's internationally known for a reason. He really knows what he's doing.
Arizona is a wonderful place, or it has been, for viewing the skies, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's one thing I loved about it. And I wanted to give people a different view of things. And that's what I try to do. Like, they might never get to Arizona and be in the desert and see these scenes. But that if you go to these places with no light, you can see space in a whole different way. And that's what I wanted to bring to the museum. And I'm pretty sure people like it.
What happened at the time that the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic was doing the premiere of the choral suite, The Moon's Symphony by Amanda Lee Falkenberg? Was that an exciting time for all of you? Because they didn't know you were going to have these Hubble images, right? And then suddenly it was perfect timing.
Yeah, and they brought that to us and said this would be great. And they had the set designer and the composer and an astronaut, too. So they had three experts with this. I just put museum exhibits up, but it was really fun and people really liked it. And before that, we had Paul Richards come in and do some programs with kids. And he was really good with the kids.
Remind people who he is.
He is an astronaut from Dunmore. He lives down in Annapolis now. Again, someone that I've known for a long time. I was in college with his sister, and he's just a really smart guy. So I wasn't surprised he was an astronaut. But to bring that, we try to connect it to the area as much as we can. And that was a perfect connection. And even in the rest of the NASA exhibit, we have Shot Glass, which is local. We have a little exhibit of their stuff because they made some of the parts for both of the telescopes, Hubble and James Webb. And from Carbondale, we have Gentex from Carbondale, who makes helmets. So we incorporate them into the exhibit. So it's very, very locally connected.
Review for us, James, how much time we have to see it.
It'll be there till October 18th. And that week, it'll take a week to take it down. Took a week to put it in. NASA sends a team of people and they put it up. We help them, but we really need them to set up the whole thing. So we have until the 18th to get in there and see the NASA exhibit.
And Sean's exhibition?
Sean's will go until, let's see, that'll go until the end of the year.
You were saying that Sean was really excited about the office.
Oh, yeah.
People might not know that. Tell them about what's on offer that way.
At the office? Well, the office exhibit is scheduled to be up until October 27 next year. But something tells me it's going to go on because it's been incredibly popular. People from all over the world have been to the exhibit. They come to New York, they see that it's there, they come to Philly, and they drive up to see it. We've had people come and the parents will say, I'll go on this trip with you, but I want to go see that exhibit. So it's been really, really popular. We did just change it because NBC will send us new props. Every 6 months, we change our props out. We just did that 2 weeks ago. You keep you coming. Yeah, people keep coming. And that's our role, I think, to make sure that the exhibits are fresh, which as soon as I got there, I'm like, things have to be changed regularly so people have something new to see when they come to the museum.
Anything else that's up that we might be interested in?
Right now, we have America 250, our exhibit for that, but that is only up until Labor Day. So it's like a week left of that. And the main thing in that exhibit is I actually have a flag that someone lent me. A gentleman down in Gettysburg collects Revolutionary War flags. He actually lent us a flag that was made by Betsy Ross's granddaughter for the centennial for 1876. And you could see that, you know, she made it, which is really exciting to people that know history, very exciting. And we also have a flag that was proposed to be our national flag before the Betsy Ross flag. So we actually have a copy of that, too, which is exciting. Oh, and if I can, for the first time, the museum is actually going to be running a trip to England. And it's revolving around the office, but not. The original office was in England, the show. It only lasted 2 years. It was a town called Slough. So they're going to take a trip to England, visit that town. And so they get the whole history of the office experience. Yeah, so they're running that too, yeah. Right. And they'll also go to the museums, of course. You have to go to the museums if you're going to go to London, for sure.
Not just because you've been a space fan forever, James. It just sounds like bringing Sean Parker and his work to Scranton and connecting with the painter from Turkey and the way he transforms pixels has been really satisfying, and people are responding.
It's been fun for me. You know, I get to bring things to the community. The community is very involved. We've had incredible attendance, highest attendance since I don't know how many years. And we're always planning new things. Our next big exhibit is Bill Chiquillo, a local painter. His will go up in November. It's going to be a good one. I've been up there 3 or 4 times. He has all this new work. You know it's his, but it's a little different. But you know it's his, you know, and it's exciting.
James Lansing, curator at the Everhart Museum in Scranton, speaking with us about a number of exhibits on display, primarily the Hubble Space Telescope New Views of the Universe, a traveling exhibit that is a 2,200 square foot exhibit that immerses us in the magnificence and mystery of Hubble's mission and introduces the James Webb Space Telescope. Lots of images, lots of interactive activities, and that, as we heard from James, will be up through October 18th. Also, Arizona-based photographer Sean Parker makes his museum exhibition debut at the Everhart with his cinematic images of Arizona's dramatic landscapes and the awe-inspiring night skies above the desert. And his work will be on exhibit through the end of the year at the Everhart. Oh, yes, the office exhibition on view through October, not this year, but October 2027. And if you'd like to go with them on that English tour, you can go to their website, everhart-museum.org, everhart-museum.org. And then America 250, We the People, that is on display through September 7th. For more information on the web, it's everhart-museum.org, everhart-museum.org, E-V-E-R-H-A-R-T, everhart-museum.org. It's the Hubble Space Telescope, New Views of the Universe, on view through October 18th, a traveling exhibition developed by NASA and the Smithsonian Institute Traveling Exhibit Service. And you can see that and spend lots of time in outer space. And that is everhart-museum.org. The Everhart Museum is located at Naog Park in Scranton, 1901 Mulberry Street.